Coming up on All About Android, we discuss a new ruling on being compelled to unlock your device with biometrics. Also, Qualcomm's Snapdragon 855 has some benchmarks, the Xiaomi Redmi Note 7, the undeletable Facebook app, and so much more. All About Android is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by WordPress. Turn your dreams into reality and launch your website at WordPress.com. Get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/AllAboutAndroid. Welcome to All About Android, episode 403, recorded on Tuesday, January 15th, 2019, your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Florence Ion.
Oh, yeah, it's the three of us today. How y'all doing?
The dream team is back.
The dream team. Playing 2019. B-ball. Yeah. I know, it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird reading that and saying 2019 out loud. I'm just not used to it.
I've had no problem writing the number and writing dates and things like that because inevitably you always get the, oh, I wrote 2018, but I've been fine this year.
Yeah, all those checks that we're always writing.
Are you guys, is this
on your checks?
Yeah, all the checks. Can I tell you, I recently had to pay, I still haven't paid it, but I recently have to pay a bill that like it's a legal bill that and there's like I was looking for like how to pay online and I like I finally emailed them. I'm like, how can I pay you? They're like, you can mail a check. And I'm like, I don't have a checkbook.
Oh,
so yeah. So I gotta ACH or wire the money to them.
I mean, it is 2019, but I still have plenty of reasons. It seems like to write checks. Like checks still command my time.
I did find out that I could go to a for my business account. Is through Chase, and I can go to a Chase branch and pay $2, and they will print a page of checks for me.
Oh, well, that's nice. That's way better.
That's convenient.
$30 every time I want to book a checks.
Oh, geez, that's crazy.
Just one.
Have we figured that out? Isn't there an app for that yet?
Yeah, you should be able to pay with your phone or something.
I saw an article that the millennials are paying celebrities via Venmo.
Oh. Oh, like just like as tips? As tips?
Like they're I get apparently Michael Che from Saturday Night Live and some other celebrity have been getting tips via Venmo, really?
Okay,
writers, people who are very popular on social media or have very expansive social media platforms, they'll be like, hi, I just basically gave you a bunch of knowledge about things for free. How about buying me a cup of coffee this weekend? And so people just like send them a dollar at this Venmo name or PayPal email address, which,
you can, so.
Nobody has cash anymore, so it's the new tip jar.
I suppose. I really have rarely ever used Venmo, the Venmo app, but I had reason to over the holiday to pay for a gift. And so it was really the first time that I really loaded it on my phone and used it. And I guess I was kind of surprised at how social it seems. Like monetary exchange / banking style app, yet there's like a whole social network in there. It just seemed like a really strange disconnect to me, but I guess that's the thing.
I will admit when I'm bored, I will scroll through my Venmo feed to see who's paying who for what.
Yes.
And I just think it's very funny because I don't think I've ever posted publicly anything that I paid for. I use Venmo all the time. At work, like I'll pick up lunch for one of my coworkers. He's like, "Oh yeah, I'll Venmo to you," and he sends me $10. It's great, but really nothing more than that. So
I use it to pay for everything: my hair, my nails, my face, and then I get to brag about it in a social network.
Nice.
Thanks for doing my nails. Nail emoji.
It's just weird to see, that what everybody's spending their money on.
It is a strange thing. It is a weird thing.
I put mine to private, by the way, so no one saw who I was buying.
Well, I do. It is sometimes nice when you like have a trip upcoming with a friend or like a tickets to a thing. Like my friend will buy us tickets, and I'll Venmo her back, and then I'll like send her a little message like, "I'm so excited for our friend date. Here's the money I owe you."
Let's get to the business.
Let's do it.
let's get to our business. Why don't we?
Yes.
We Venmo'd all around the place. It's time for some news.
One check that's easy to cash is finding some Android news.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
I'd check that cash. I'll cash that check. There we go. I'd do both.
Yeah,
both
sound pretty great. I was going to say that wrong.
All right, Flo, you got the top story. I'm not sure this is really a top story, but hey.
Well, to be fair, the first thing I saw this morning was that apparently this news had gone live, which was that Google Fi is getting not only RCS compatibility, or rather that happened yesterday, but also Google's going to increase its availability and its speed across the globe. So first things first, if you are on a supported Google Fi, Project Fi phone, I'm sorry, I keep calling it Project Fi, Google Fi.
Easy to do.
You can have access to RCS compatibility. It's supported via the Android Messages app, just as it is for those of us on Verizon. Not that I really noticed a difference just yet. Maybe because everybody I talk to is on iMessages. I don't know.
Right.
But these RCS features are going to include typing indicators, read receipts, high-res video sharing, and Wi-Fi messaging, which will be great if you like to keep in touch while you're in the air. It's going to be automatically enabled for Fi users, and it's available on the Pixel phones, the Moto G6, the LG V35, the LG G7, and the Android One Moto X. Google also announced it's going to have faster 4G LTE coverage in 33 countries, and I'm happy to report one of those countries is Romania.
Oh, thankfully. Just in time for my trip to Romania to visit your family.
Yes, they would gladly accept you and feed you, so.
Well, then sign me up. I've checked my messages app. It doesn't appear to be activated for me.
Are you on Fi now, Jason?
I am. Yeah, no, I've been on Google Fi for a while now, probably like, if I had to guess, like 9 months-ish, somewhere around.
What?
Yeah.
I can't do it. I'm as scared to move to Google Fi as I am to go to like Japan and China because I don't know the language. Like for some reason there's a mental hurdle over Google Fi and like the way it works and doing anything with my number, because I've had my phone number since the 90s.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm desperately afraid of screwing it all up, and I just don't have the time to figure it out.
It's not that hard.
Is it really?
No. I just switched over my phone number that I've had for many, many years as well. Maybe not as long as you've had yours, but long enough. Yeah. It came over just fine. The monthly price, it fluctuates the way Fi is meant to, but it's always somewhere around like $35 or $40. So,
I'm paying like $110, I think, for my.
Wow. Holy cow.
I have unlimited everything, including international, and I just don't want to lose that. Not that I have any plans to go international at any time, but like it's like the idea that I have unlimited data, I have unlimited, you know, like when I'm in England or in Europe or anything like that. So I'm like, this is fine. I'll keep it. But I mean, maybe I should change it.
Well, no, because Fi does kind of cap out at a certain amount of gigs that you use. You don't get charged per gig anymore. And I think it's like once you get up to like $70, I could be wrong on that, but once you get up to $70, then all of your overage from there, I think, is covered. I never touch that because I'm always in Wi-Fi places. So, I'm actually paying more on Google Fi than I was on the T-Mobile plan that I used. And even on that one, it was not unlimited. It was 5 gigs of data. It was unlimited data, but throttled at 5 gigs. So just 5 gigs.
I don't be throttled. Let's play this game. Everyone open up your phone.
Uh-huh.
All right, and go to settings.
Okay.
And then search in settings for data usage.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
And then pull up your data usage, and let's see how much data you've used in the first 15 days of the month.
Oh.
And we'll see who uses more data.
Let's see here. First 50. So I don't know how to set it. First 15 days of the month.
Oh, well, I mean, it says January. We're only 15 days into January.
Yeah. But mine goes December 24th to January 23rd. That's probably because that's my billing cycle.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So
I've got, you see, under my data usage, I've got two tabs. One that says T-Mobile, one says Wi-Fi, and under T-Mobile it says data used January 1st to the 31st. So
data.
Oh, well, I wanted to play that game.
No, actually, let's see here. App data usage. Maybe
there's
a way.
Can you tap on cellular data usage?
Let's see here. Cellular data usage. No, that's Wi-Fi. That's mobile. So yeah, I guess it would be. You can show it if you want, Victor. So app data use. So this is my screen. Mobile would be your cellular, right? App data usage, I guess, could be it. But up here, as you can see, usage, total usage, mobile data, December 24th to January 23rd. That's 5 gigs. That's actually high for me.
You've used 5 gig already. Jeez, wow.
Well, right. Yeah, basically, I haven't hit the month yet. So yeah, this has been a heavy month. Yeah, we've done a lot of road trips and streaming a lot of music and stuff.
All right, you ready for this?
Oh, no.
Yes.
From January 1st to January 15th, so 15 days, mobile data, I've used 1.03 gig, so on T-Mobile.
Okay.
Wi-Fi, I've used 18.5 gig.
Well, thankfully, all that was on Wi-Fi. My Wi-Fi data usage is 14.27 for the same period. So what about you, Flo, now that we're sharing all of our data?
I did swap out SIMs at the beginning of January, and data usage from December 18th to now is 770 megabytes.
Not bad.
That just includes the Spotify streaming, and Wi-Fi usage is nearly 40 gigs in that same time period.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a lot.
So I do, well, because I downloaded Google Play Movies for the airplane. I downloaded photos for that ridiculous 10-year challenge that, by the way, I'm doing privately, not publicly.
I just saw that today. I'm so behind on all of these memes. I was like, do I now?
Are you really behind?
I did it privately. I sent it to, the friends. I was like, hey, look at us 10 years ago. We're babies.
It is kind of interesting to see how much change happens in 10 years.
It was funny because my wife is like, oh, people are posting their first profile pic and their profile pic today. She's like, what's yours? And I went and looked and I was like, oh, my profile pic from 2007 is the same photo I'm using in 2019. So.
Of course it is. You never change your stuff.
I know.
Yeah. Ron hasn't aged in a day.
It's true.
I haven't.
It's true. Looking at you now, I feel like I just met you however many years ago. Ron, you've got the next story.
All right. So one of my favorite kind of urban legends is if you ever meet an undercover cop, you say, if you're a cop, you have to tell me, right? Well, so now we can add to that cops can't make you scan your face or your finger to open up your phone. Might not be an urban legend, though, because a California judge ruled that unlocking a phone with a fingerprint or face or iris scan is the same as using a password, which means that it's protected by the Fifth Amendment. And this sets a precedent that means that users can't be compelled to unlock their phone with their fingerprint or scan. Prior to this, only passcodes were protected as they were seen as testimonial, i.e. self-incriminating. And now face or iris or fingerprint unlock is protected in the same way. And the judge in the case admits that technology is outpacing law and that biometrics should be subject to the same standards as passcodes. So this happened in California. It doesn't mean that it's illegal or legal or whatever. If you get stopped and a cop wants you to unlock your phone, you might want to comply or at least talk or just if you've got nothing to hide, then what are you hiding? But still, if your case was to get to court, this case could be used as precedent to say that you shouldn't have been able to. But and it just shows that technology is outpacing law, and we're getting into a weird Blade Runner kind of world where the legal stuff doesn't know what to do with what you can do with these phones. So,
yeah,
it's crazy.
I mean, we've heard this. I feel like we talked about this on the show 2 or 3 years ago. How long have fingerprints been a kind of a big thing on phones? Probably about 4 years, right?
I'd say about 4 years. Yeah.
And it was always like, yeah, well, this is really cool. It's really convenient, but just be aware that this isn't necessarily the safest way to go if you really want to protect your phone. This gives whoever really wants to get into your phone an easier way to do it if they can compel you to do it or whatever the case may be. I don't know that this ruling necessarily means it will no longer happen. Like you said, Ron, it's just kind of lays out a precedent to follow. And I guess we'll see as we go forward if that precedent is followed or strayed from. Who knows? But up to this point, it's been pretty like cut and dry, like use your fingerprint, use your iris scan or whatever. That's a thing that's on you. That's not necessarily something that you have, that you know. And so you could not be compelled to testify against yourself. Therefore, you could not say you could choose to not say your password. And that way you wouldn't be testifying against yourself. But they saw the biometrics as different. And now apparently they don't.
Just throw the phone out the car. Just throw it while you're works. Driving. Just what phone, officer? What are you talking about?
Those aren't my fingerprints on that phone you found three blocks from the scene.
Somebody took my hands and put them on there.
That'll totally work, Flo. You're right. Totally work. Let's see here. Let's do an email. We got an email from G. Shannon, who says, "Hey, AAA crew, long time, first time. I go all the way back to the Droid X days."
Droid X.
That was a big blocky one. And like you guys, I'm the one in my family, I'm the one that my family turns to for tech issues, and I don't mind. I honestly enjoy sharing what I know and would love to share with others across the internet. Isn't there any software you can recommend that would make podcasting or vlogging on YouTube simple? I would also like to connect a microphone for better sound quality. Thanks for all that you do. I was kind of looking around. I was like, well, YouTube, you can record from directly in the YouTube app. But what I couldn't figure out is whether when you're recording in the YouTube app on Android to be posted to YouTube, whether you can take an external microphone directly into that. And I played around with a couple of the microphones that I had at home. And I could not get it to work, which is kind of a big fail, I feel like, a big miss for YouTube. Mm. So you might have to do a little bit of extra work. In other words, there's an app called Open Camera. That's just one of many apps out there. But Open Camera is an open source, really functional, free camera app that does support external microphone recording. So you could use an app like this. It's developed by Mark Harmon, who's created a lot of really great apps. And you could use this to record your stuff, your vlogging, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, plug in an external microphone into the headphone jack. And as long as you might have to play around and find one that works. I saw a bunch of people on YouTube that were pointing to this and let it be known that I'd never heard of this mic before, but they all seem to think it's great. It's powered to Wyze. And I think the reason they think it's great is because it's sound quality for cost. It's only $22. It's a very inexpensive lavalier microphone, but this is the kind that, and they even spell out what models of devices it works with, but you can plug this right in, have a nice up close on you microphone for, you know, that kind of near sound, so that you don't get all of that external, you know, road noise or air noise, or whatever, you know, the environment that surrounds you, isolate things. And maybe that'll work. That'll do the trick. That'll get you there, and you won't have to spend much money to do it. That right there is like the mic and the free app. That's like $25 all said and done, and you could be vlogging and probably sound better than a lot of people that post their videos to YouTube. And then editing for Android, and there's just a number of – I found an Android Authority app article that details some of the best video editors, and you know, you can find in there, there's a number of them. Many of them are free. Adobe Premiere Clip is one we talked about that's pretty easy to use, but there's a number of them on here. And I don't know, but being that we have spent our lives or our professional careers editing video and doing things on like a bigger scale on like computers, it's hard for me to think that this is the right way to go, because I'm just so used to having the bigger kind of setup and more control. I feel like this would just be really frustrating. What do you guys think?
Oh, I'm with you. I can't any sort of media editing or anything on phones. Just it breaks my brain.
Yeah.
But that said, I mean, but that's the generation gap. I mean, like, you know,
totally, totally.
Where was that? I think it was at the Google event when I was talking with Josh Vergara and Mr. Mobile and Michael Fisher. And we were talking about and someone else was in the conversation. I forget who. But we're talking about how the bigger phones are better for. It might have been actually when Juan was on the show. I have too many people, but
too many so awesome people
talking about being able to edit video and stuff on the go and on your phone and be able to do it. And you're going to an event and you want to quickly edit up that video and put it up on YouTube and now more than ever you can do it because of the processing power of these phones, all the stuff like that. But conceptually, I need more room to work. Mm-hmm. You know, like the fact that I'm having a hard time with the OnePlus 6T of using Gboard to swipe, and the screen is so big that it's picking up the bottom of my thumb and causing typos. That's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine what editing would be like.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's not a replacement on the Chromebook either. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
When you bring those Android apps to the Chromebook, it's like, you know, I think I'm going to go to the PC and use like the real stuff.
Chromebook is good for many things, but there are a few kind of like those high level. I would say video editing totally falls in that category. You can even edit photos on a Chromebook and have a pretty.
You can
good
edit
time.
Audio on a Chromebook. You can do that okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. But again. Video, yeah. It requires so much more resources than a Chromebook or an Android phone could offer. And one of those resources is a giant desktop.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So very tangentially related. First of all, I hope we answered your question, G. Shannon. Let us know how it goes. If any of you have noticed, I am using a iPad.
Oh, that's right.
Boom.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The Twit Switch 2019 is on.
You didn't talk to us about this. We didn't know you were doing this until, I didn't until I got the newsletter on Sunday.
Me too.
In my email.
Same here.
I knew you wouldn't approve, and I was afraid.
Well, we would at least offer our support in this trying time.
That's true. Please help me.
I wouldn't.
Help me.
I wouldn't.
No, I think at this point, Ron's just annoyed by it, because this is year three of Twit Switch, and it's like, seriously, we got to do this again.
I'm just very defensive of you, Jason. But I want you to be productive. And having recently used iOS tablets and was unable to complete the task I had to do, I don't know how you're functional, much less using the dock.
Yeah, it's a challenge. So this year, what Megan Maroney and I decided to do on Tech News Weekly, we're doing 3 weeks. So it's not not twice that, which is what it was last year. And we're not doing phones. We're doing basically my Pixel Slate went to Megan. And her iPad Pro with a keyboard accessory is what I'm using right now. That came to me because the Pixel Slate, I use that like basically 100% of the time for everything that I do. I'll say 95% of the time. I've got it down and I'm really comfortable on that. So like I feel very confident handing that to Megan and saying, be productive, because I know it's really easy to do once you get used to how it works. Jumping onto an iPad with a keyboard attachment and trying to do everything here is, oh my God. Like so far, like I've only spent a couple of days doing this. And today was the first day where I was like constructing the dock and everything, trying to use the Sheets app and everything. And I mean, after 4 hours, I was like, I can't do this. Like, I'm so slow. It slows me down considerably. So we'll see how it goes. But my reason for bringing it up was because you were talking, Flo, about how Chrome OS is good for certain things and not for others, and, you know, running Android apps or whatever. Megan was using it earlier and she was asking some questions and she was like, so, you know, she had the Gmail Android app running on it. And I saw that. And I was like, oh, man, don't do that. Like, that's just going to be a nightmare for you. Use Gmail in the browser. She's like, well, but it can run these apps. Like, why not use the apps? And it's like Android apps on a Chrome OS device is like the lowest rung of what you do.
It's on an as-needed basis.
Yes, exactly. It fills in the gaps when you don't have a better alternative is kind of where that ends up being. So she's having to reprogram her mind out of an app world and into a browser world, which is basically what we do on computers. And I'm having to go from a browser world and go entirely into an app world, but on a tablet sized screen. And so it's almost like we're not comparing apples to apples.
This is
going to be interesting.
This is good. This is exactly, I feel like this is the experiment. It's really going to tell us, I think, how the Pixel Slate is going to exist in the world alongside the very famous and popular iPad. I mean, people know Apple was really told people that they can use it. It did a really good job teaching people that it could use that product as kind of like a, you know, a makeup machine of your own, like just buy a keyboard and look, it's like a laptop.
Yeah,
and so I want to see now the actual effectiveness of the Pixel Slate with somebody who is not 100% on that Google train.
Yeah.
You know, because for us, it's, you know, we already got everything up there in the ecosystem.
Yep.
We can do it just fine. We can go from device to device. But somebody who's coming from an iPad or from the Apple world, and you know, it's also good to get her perspective, to get Megan's perspective as an Apple user, just so that we know like what Google's doing right or wrong. Because I feel like sometimes I don't really see that because I'm still coming from this, like, I use all the stuff anyway. So
yeah,
it's as good as I need it to be.
Yeah, I completely agree. I miss the trackpad, though. I mean, I realize this has a keyboard on it, but it doesn't have a trackpad, and I use the trackpad all the time, and I can be really fast with it because it's like a trackpad combination.
I love a trackpad too.
You know, with my left hand doing, you know, tabbing and all this kind of stuff, so I can move really fast. And here I'm just like, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. But
I'm
anyways, yes,
forward.
It's that time of year again. Here we
I'm
are.
I'm looking forward.
Sorry, I didn't run it by you guys. I realize I didn't.
Which is,
fill
a heads
you
up
in.
Would have been nice. That's all
yeah,
I'm saying.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I will remember this for next year. I will. Let
it's not
you know.
Like we don't talk. You know, it's not like no. we don't have aloe.
Come you know, I messed up. I messed up, you guys.
No,
and
okay.
I really should have told you. And
maybe you can talk to Megan about having her come on for a segment, because I would love to hear her opinion.
Yeah. We should have her on.
Yeah. All right.
At the end of the 3 weeks, she should be a guest yes. on the show. Why not?
All right. All right.
Hello,
Megan. I will check in with her and see if she's available. She can
putting this out into
us.
The world. Megan, wherever you are.
She's going to hear about it on Twitter in like 2 seconds.
Yes. You're being paged. You're being paged.
All right. Let's take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by WordPress, a brand that you are already so familiar with. Whether you realize it or not, WordPress is everywhere online. And you know, you can build a website on WordPress. That's the beauty of it. Everybody, it's so easy that anybody can do it. What would you do if you could do anything? And that's what you can do with WordPress.com. They're the sky's the limit for you. With powerful site building tools, thousands of themes, and 24/7 support from real experts, WordPress.com lets anyone pursue whatever it is that they love by launching a site that's free to start with room to grow. That's the beauty of it. You could start simple, you could start using a template, and then grow it from there. WordPress.com was started so anyone can publish their ideas. No two-week trials, no hidden fees, and WordPress users own their content forever. WordPress.com is built to grow with you, to get you where you want to be tomorrow. They have a wonderful customer support team that's made of actual WordPress experts. They're standing by to help you 24 hours a day, including weekends. So whenever you have that question or that problem, whatever it may be, they're there to help. The WordPress platform is super flexible. It's powerful as well. So much so that some of the biggest companies on earth use it to build their websites. And millions of people use WordPress.com every day to turn their dreams into reality. And these sites look awesome. And they're easy to make. So go to WordPress.com/allaboutandroid. You'll get 15% off any new plan purchase. That's WordPress.com/allaboutandroid for 15% off your new website. You'll get started and you'll see why everybody uses WordPress. WordPress.com/allaboutandroid. And we thank WordPress for their support. And now it is time for hardware. Starting with Ron.
Starting with Xiaomi. Starting with Redmi. So you might have heard Redmi. That earlier this month, Xiaomi launched the Redmi. Which is a sub-brand of Xiaomi, and they announced the Redmi Note 7 as part of that new sub-brand. Very confusing. So the Redmi Note 7 is running a Snapdragon 660, and it's got 4 gig and 64 gig of storage, or a 6 gig of memory and 64 gig of storage option. It's got a 4,000 milliamp battery. I clicked away from my notes. It's got a glass back, a cool gradient color scheme. In case you're curious what color scheme it is, it's cool. And now here's the kicker. It's got a rear camera capable of 48 megapixel at a f1.8 aperture, along with a 5 megapixel secondary camera. And it's got a 13 megapixel front-facing camera. And you can get this for about $147 or $999 yuan or whatever the Chinese yuan. So basically for under $150, you can get a cheap 48 megapixel camera phone.
Wow. I mean,
how is that working?
That's a really nice looking phone, especially
really
for $150
is, right?
bucks.
That's I crazy. Like this red. I like this Redmi.
It's Redmi sub-brand. Well, I mean, we've known the Redmi, name before. I think maybe before it was Xiaomi, Redmi, blah, blah, blah. And now Redmi is going to kind of stand on its own. Is that similar to kind of like Oppo and OnePlus, or I don't know.
Well, no, but Oppo and OnePlus are two separate companies. Like, Oppo is a strategic investor in OnePlus.
Oh,
but
you know what it would be? It would be kind of like Honor. Like, there's Huawei, and then there's Honor, which Honor is a Huawei sub-brand. So that's kind of what this is like.
The larger question is, how are they getting away with calling this the Note?
Well, that's a good question, actually. Yeah. The Note 7, even.
Yeah, I know.
Wait a minute. Wasn't the Note 7 the one that had all the fire issues? Maybe
it was.
Yes, but now for SEO purposes.
Yeah. The Note 7 is a couple of years gone at this point. They figured it's time to jump on it or something. That's a nice looking phone for $150.
It's really nice. Apparently they're saving
it. That's so slick looking. I like it.
Apparently they're saving this reddish tone for a Chinese New Year launch.
Oh, okay.
Which would bode very well in terms of marketing. Yeah. Very, very good marketing.
That's hot looking. I like it. Looks really nice.
I mean, I wish we had a little more of this in the U.S.
Yeah. Kind of I feel like here in the U.S., very often the lower range devices feel and look like lower range devices. Like, let's style them up a little bit.
Yeah. Give them a little pizzazz. Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
If you're not going to put NFC in there, at least make it pizzazzy.
Make it pizzazzy. I like it. There we go. Make it pizzazzy. I don't even know how to spell.
Thesaurus.com will feel about that one.
It kind of looks like pizzazzy. It kind of looked like pizza Z.
I made it up.
But
pizza Z. Well, that sounds delicious.
That sounds like the hip new pizza place in the Mission.
You know what else is pizzazzy, Flo? I bet you do.
Another phone that maybe will be super colorful and exciting. Who knows? But we do know that the Samsung Galaxy S10, yes, folks, it's barely a month into the new year. We're already high up on this news. It's coming February 20th. Now, this particular event is going to take place not in New York City, as happened in years past, but at the Bill Graham Civic Auditorium in San Francisco. Oh. So it's going to be in good old SF. And there are rumored variants of three types of Galaxy S10s that will be possibly announced, including a fourth with 5G capability to be launched in the spring, which is when I'm assuming every carrier has decided, finally, we'll tell them we have 5G, even though we're probably not going to be ready. Oh, sorry, what? Also, Samsung is expected to show off a fully functional version of its foldable phone, rumored to be called the Galaxy F, which I think stands for Florence. So it's the Galaxy Florence.
Should, yes.
Is what it's called. Yeah,
the Galaxy Flow.
Uh-huh, exactly, exactly. Yes. Because it flows open and closed.
That's right.
There you go.
The Galaxy Flow can open and close.
Exactly.
Like it.
And not just her mouth. So Samsung also announced that January 28th is when it will show off the new Galaxy M series. And so this is like a mid-range family of phones. And Samsung plans to bring the teardrop-shaped notch to this device, similar to the one on the OnePlus 6T. This is being teased on Amazon, so it sounds like it's going to be a real hit on the online retailer. It's also rumored to point to two variants, so not just that one Galaxy M, but two different kinds, one with a 5,000 milliamp battery. So really just kind of, it sounds like Samsung is, what's that word for when you, it's like when you launch a net and you just hope to catch whoever you possibly can in that net.
Throwing their phones at a wall and seeing what sticks.
Exactly. Now it's, I think, important to know that this is definitely a strategy of Samsung past. Remember when they were making like phones of all sorts, and they had Tizen running phones and Android phones, and they had mid-range and high-range, and they had giant phones. You know, it's possible, since the Chinese market has, or rather the Chinese manufacturers have just kind of really grown their mid-range and low-end presence and showing that they can really offer a lot of quality for not so much money. I have a feeling Samsung's feeling like, we really want a piece of that market again, not just the high end. So I imagine that's what's in store for this year. Maybe.
And they're also kind of playing through on their what they had said as far as like bringing features that you have normally come to expect from premium devices and bring them to their mid-tier devices. So you're seeing their first notch phone be one of their mid-tier devices, which for whatever reason, some people say is like a premium device feature.
Is that, I thought it was something like, oh, I don't know, NFC or wireless charging.
NFC is so old. It's so passe.
I know, but it's not always in a low-end phone.
Yeah, that's true.
Or a mid-range phone.
Yeah, that's true.
It gets left out.
It does
out
seem
still.
Like one of the things that gets cut first on the low-end phones.
Yeah, yeah. So now, Ron, you have the OnePlus 6T, which has the notch in a very similar fashion, the teardrop, which I personally, as far as the notches look, I actually kind of like the teardrop. What do you think?
I don't mind the teardrop, but I mean, I like the teardrop. I didn't have a problem with the notch on the OnePlus 6. And actually, to be honest with you, I did notice with the teardrop notch, I lost the LED light telling me when I had a text message, which I now I have to turn. I have to, you know, touch my phone in some way to have it light up to see if I have any texts. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, what happened to my little light? But the teardrop notch is fine. I mean, like it's definitely out of the way. I don't notice it as much. Yeah. But again, I didn't have a problem with the main notch. So
I gave the OnePlus 6T to my husband to use in Romania because he couldn't use his main phone there. And when he came back, he actually kept it. And because it works with Verizon, he got it all set up and configured, and it's working fine. But my cousins, who I guess tech runs in our blood because a lot of us talk about Android, my cousins all noticed his phone and were like, what phone is that? That's the OnePlus 6T. You have the teardrop notch. It is a global phenomenon, folks. Wow. The teardrop notch is a global phenomenon.
It's stylish.
I'm
not surprised. Yeah, that's a global phenomenon.
And then you have Samsung's upcoming at some point. Have they announced a phone that's going to have the hole punch?
I don't know how that... The hole punch just feels... I mean, let's see how people respond to it, right? Let's see how everybody responds to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that remains to be seen. When they were showing it, well, I mean, we've seen some phones that have the hole punch, and I think I expected to dislike it a lot more than I actually did when I saw the actual phone with the hole punch on it. But I can't remember the model of the phone. That would be very helpful right now. Sorry. Don't have it for you. What I do have is the new Snapdragon processor, 855. This is not new news necessarily. Last year they announced it. Every year we get a new flagship Snapdragon processor for the premium Android devices that are to come. And now we're starting to get better insight into the benchmarks around this new processor. And we've learned a few things. Obviously, there was some sort of embargo that lifted today because a number of publications from their time at CES had some time with a benchmark device and unlabeled, probably never to be released device that was running the 855. They were given some time to run some benchmarks. So do keep in mind that benchmarks do not represent real world usage. Mm-mm. It's just numbers, but it gives you a sense at this early stage of what they have marketed it as and what it's delivering on based on these little bits of time that the publications got. So 45% faster than the Snapdragon 845, according to CNET. The Qualcomm had promised around 45% of speed improvements in December, so that's good. CNET says the 855 leaves, they say, the S9 and the LG V40, quote, in the dust. Whatever that means, but hey, that sounds promising. AnandTech says that real-world performance, though it is excellent, it doesn't quite reach their expectations. AnandTech, I feel like, has pretty high expectations. That's a good thing. Huawei's Kirin 980, which is a pretty big powerhouse, still beats the 855, they said, in most workloads. But power consumption, much lower than the 845. And overall, the 855 is, they say, extremely well executed. Tom's Guide also said it's narrowing the gap between it and the Apple A12 chip. The A12 chip was 26% ahead on the last Snapdragon device or processor, this time only 2% ahead in multi-core performance. So all these things, like, it can kind of seem like a mishmash and a jumble, but ultimately it seems like the A55 is delivering, at least in these benchmarks, on some of the promises that they were that they had. XDA confirms a 20% jump in GPU performance, which is another big part of this new processor, GPU performance improvements. So, yeah. So I guess we'll, you know, remains to be seen what this actually means, but we will get used to hearing A55 as this year progresses, because that's just the way it works. Every year we get a new Snapdragon premium system on a chip, and then it ends up being the thing that we find in all of the premium, most of the premium smartphones, maybe save for like Huawei and a few other manufacturers, because they do their own. Samsung also has its own, but it's still expected to have the 855 in the Galaxy S10.
I'm going to say, I feel like it's just, we just wait for the Qualcomm processor. It's like, there's no competition, at least here in the US, for like different processors. So even if you do give me benchmarks for the new Qualcomm, whatever's going to be in the flagships, like, it doesn't matter, because I don't really have a choice.
Right.
I really don't have a choice besides a Qualcomm chip, especially here in the US. So I'm either going to go for the ultimate high-end one, or I'm going to go for maybe a mid-range one, and that's kind of it. So, cool.
So why, if Samsung has its Exynos processor, and, you know, it always seems to release the Galaxy S series in the U.S. with the Snapdragon premium system on chip, and then internationally it'll release it in many markets with its own Exynos chip that it creates, why... Like, I guess I don't understand the reason behind why Samsung doesn't just release all of them with the Exynos chip. There must be some reason. There must be some really good reason why they choose for Snapdragon over
there. I always wondered that, and I could never really get an answer when I would ask. And I have a feeling that it has to do with certification of some sort. Yeah. Samsung has certification overseas more than it does here. Maybe it is because Qualcomm has the market here, and maybe it's kind of hard to bring in. That's me putting it nicely.
Right. Well, and Bleak's in chat saying, which I didn't consider it. Bleak says your radios are freaking whack there. The frequencies.
Oh yeah, duh,
so probably the radios. Thank you for putting it in terms that we can all understand, Bleak.
True. I always forget about that. We do have weird cellular radios. And plus we have weird things with the carriers. I bet you they do something. I bet you it's just layers. It's like a burrito.
Yeah. It is. Don't you go making me hungry, Flo.
I know. I'm sorry. It's because I started thinking about like black beans and a tortilla and some pies.
You're doing it.
Sorry.
It's a phone burrito.
You're doing exactly what I asked you not to do. You're making me hungry.
Oh my God. Phone burrito. Oh, legendary.
All right. All right, Ron, you got the email.
All right, we got an email. Charles from San Antonio, Texas, wrote in and says, I have a question about a smartwatch. Wanting to upgrade from a Fitbit Blaze with CES being done, I wanted to know if you had any recommendations within a $300 budget. Thanks for your help. Keep up the great work. Hope everyone had a great new year. Charles, I had a great new year. Thank you. So now that CES is done, I mean, Flo, I feel like you're a person on the street with all this gear and wearables. If somebody wanted to upgrade a Fitbit Blaze, what direction can they go in for about $300?
I was just thinking about this as we were coming to it and thinking about how out of touch I am with the Wear OS platform, because I've just been frustratingly not having my needs met. Like, I just feel like nobody's making a watch for me. At the same rate, there are a bunch of watches coming out. And remember, the fashion brands are going all in on Wear OS, which is a good thing, because that means that you'll be able to choose stylish watches versus like utilitarian ones, which means you'll want to actually like charge that thing at the end of the day and wear it. So I think one of the ones that's really standing out is Fossil. I mean, I have one of their hybrid watches. I have used several of their smartwatches, and they've been pretty consistent and have worked really well. So the Fossil Sport actually has the Snapdragon Wear 3100 chipset in it. It has NFC. It's in a 41-millimeter case, so it's a tiny bit bigger, but it's available, and it's only $255. It's $255. I shouldn't say only. It's $255, which is on the it's not on the splurged side, but it's on the just affordable enough side. And because it comes in all these different colors, you can kind of buy the one that fits your style. And I mean, Fossil has a great track record. They are watchmakers, and now they're making smartwatches. So why the heck not?
Yeah, and that's not necessarily a CES-announced wearable, just to point out, but that is within your price range, and many, I feel like, in 2018 pointed to this to be one of the better Wear OS wearables out that year. And then as you were talking, Flo, I was reminded of, and I don't know that this necessarily would be a solution for Charles, because I think it's more of a... more of a ladies' watch than
it's
a gentleman's
focused.
Watch.
It's focused. A femme focused.
There we
yes.
go. The Kate Spade scallop. This just triggered my mind as far as what you were talking about, like a Wear OS watch that actually has some stylings that maybe
that's pretty. I would wear this now. Like, I'm glad you brought this up to me because this is really pretty, and now I want to go see this at the store. It has scalloped edges around the display, which is just nice and frilly. So if you're into that sort of thing, and it comes in all these really nice colors and with, you know, leather band, and it's not much bigger than the other watches. And it also has there is NFC on it. Sorry, I'm like scrolling through the letters trying to find all this stuff. And so nobody's really worn it outside of like seeing it at CES, but just from the looks of it, I mean, if this is the road that we're going down this year for Wear OS, I think you're going to see me maybe coming back to it. So check. We're not talking about me here, but now we are. Check back with me in a few months to see what I get. And as for you, Charles, it looks like there's going to be a lot more stuff out there to choose from. And Fossil is always a good bet.
Yeah, Fossil is a good bet. And and I would say if you're in the market to find a Wear OS device now, make double sure that it has the Snapdragon Wear 3100 chipset. Yeah. That's the new one, long like overdue, or at least a couple of years overdue, updated system on chip for these Wear watches, and you want to make sure that any watch you're getting now has that. And I think there are still some being released that has the old chipset. So be aware of that. I think you're just going to be happier in the long run if you do that.
So. Be aware.
Be aware.
It's like,
what is that from? Is that from
Lion King?
Lion King.
Be prepared.
Be prepared. There we go. All right. It's time for some app news. Flo, you got the first one.
So are we still, like, I thought we told you all about this. Sorry, I'm being shady. Okay, so Bloomberg posted last week about the discovery that Facebook couldn't be deleted from certain Samsung phones. It can only be disabled on certain devices. But like I said, non-removable apps on Android is like nothing new. But the timing of this article is giving new conversation to this, or rather bringing the conversation back to the table, which I think is a good thing, because we've spent all this time sort of lauding like, ooh, UI changes and all these new features. But then we forgot to mention, oh, by the way, there's a bunch of apps you can't delete.
Yeah.
And with kind of the way that Facebook has been in hot water in the last 6 to 8 months, I can also imagine people who want to get rid of Facebook and move on with their life and can't do that on their Samsung phones are not very happy about this. So Facebook says that when the app is disabled, the app acts like it has been deleted. And again, this has been reported on, and we've said this before, so you're still going to have that space taken up on your little, you know, your little flash space, hard drive, whatever, on your phone. But you're not going to be able to use the app. It's not going to bother you, but it's still there. And that can be very bothersome for some. So yes, it's not tracking your location data. It's not collecting anything on you. It's not transmitting to Facebook. It's not logging you in. But for some, maybe the sheer fact that it's still there is just too much. And for that, I think we should maybe start an online support group or something. I don't know. I mean, It's a sign of the times.
It is a sign of the times. Yeah, I thought it was interesting when I first saw this article posted and then blowing up, like totally blowing up. It was like, did you hear that Facebook can't be removed from these phones?
Yeah, I told you, there's a lot of apps
that can't be removed from phones. It's called bloatware. And like they've been doing it for years. And the best you can do is disable it. You can't remove it. It just turns out that right now is a really bad time for Facebook. And people just, it can be a bad word for a lot of people. And so they just don't even want to see it on their screen. And if they do, even if it's disabled, they still think there's something happening in the background. And why wouldn't they think that?
Hey, remember when there was a phone with a little blue Facebook icon button on it?
Yes.
Oh, I remember that one. What was that called?
Remember the Facebook phone from HTC?
Yeah. Oh,
I even forgot what it was called now.
Yeah, like, I know, right?
I reviewed it. Like, I don't remember.
Now I got to look it up. Now we're tangenting, but that's okay.
It was HTC first.
Yes.
What was the one with the Facebook button on it, though?
It was white. It was a white phone.
And it had a Facebook button on it. I remember this. What is it? I can't find it.
Right. I didn't make that up, right?
I swear there was a phone that had
HTC adds a Facebook button to new Android handsets. Where is it? So there were HTC. It was at Mobile World Congress
status.
In 2011.
HTC status.
Oh, no. Yeah, status. That's what it is.
Oh, boy.
No, and the salsa. It was the HTC Cha-Cha and salsa. Yeah.
Like, literally, it's like phone, and then down in the chin, off on an island on its own, is a little Facebook button.
Victor, it's in the chat. You can... you found it on GSM Arena.
There we go.
I found the article. Thank you, Victor. Yeah, there it is.
Yes, I remember. Wow, look at that. Right there prominently where your thumb can just hit it, and then you could take a picture with your 5-megapixel video recorder. And let people know how you're doing.
Oh boy, that phone.
Just crazy.
Look at that.
Speaking of Facebook, I walked into a relative's apartment last weekend, and sitting there on their right next to their TV was a big old Facebook portal.
Oh, you saw one in the wild.
I saw one in the wild. I saw apparently someone's family bought it forever because their family were spread out in multiple states. And so to stay connected, they all got portals for Christmas.
And so they were in, did you say a coffee shop? I'm sorry, I missed that.
No, apartment. A relative's apartment, just next to the TV.
I would actually could see someone doing it, but I just pictured someone at a coffee shop with a Facebook portal.
Hi, Mom. How's it going?
Hey, you never know. Like internet cafes, they still have those overseas in a lot of markets.
I mean, I've seen pictures of people that take their gaming rigs into coffee shops.
Free so Wi-Fi.
It wouldn't be out
with
of
purchase.
Yeah, out of the realm of possibility. Dedicated Facebook button phone. No, thank you. Go away.
By the way, very quickly before we move on, it's just Bleak reminded me. I just want to bring it up to anybody who is annoyed by Facebook on their phone. That's an installer on the Samsung phones. So as long as you don't install it, it's not going to fully install. It's just going to live there perpetually.
I can understand why people wouldn't understand that, though. You know what I mean? Like, totally. That's great. That's awesome. But some people aren't going to know that. They're going to see that logo there and they're going to freak out. They're going to lose their loving minds because of everything.
Which is why we're here to tell you what the truth is.
Yes. And Bleak to make sure.
Thank you, Bleak.
Make sure that we don't miss things like that. I can't wait to see what Bleak pokes a hole in this next story. Google announced Project Strobe last October. You may remember that was in reaction to its Google Plus privacy bug, what has actually grown to be privacy bugs. Now it's sharing reports on how it's doing in its efforts to impose rules and limits on developers to kind of tighten up that security on its services. Google announced that it'll begin to remove apps from the Play Store that violate its permissions rules, they say, over the course of the next couple of weeks. Those include limiting SMS and call log permissions to messaging and dialing apps in order to prevent data leaks. Developers, of course, of apps that use those permissions in other ways are not very happy because, you know, they aren't necessarily always just doing that to slurp up data. They might actually be, you know, cultivating the Android goodness that we've all come to know about Android, where, here's a developer that came up with a unique way to use that permission, but in something that solves a problem that I have. If it sits outside of messaging and dialer, in other words, Google's saying, it's not going to cut it anymore unless you appeal. So developers will be contacted by Google, and they have 90 days to comply to make those changes or request an exemption. Then they would have to describe what that exemption is, and if that does not work, then I mean, they could be rejected, and many developers have been so far. March 9th is the deadline for this compliance. And yeah, Google apparently has been also expanding its list of use cases based on developer feedback. So glimmer of hope, I suppose. But I mean, Google tightening ship, and I know that it's making developers upset, developers who are using these things in different ways and not being shady about it. But it's a... it's kind of a tightrope to walk across, right? Like, I can understand why Google would want to tighten things down. So I don't know. In some ways, I feel like Google's doing the right thing here.
I totally agree that if it's violating the rules, then it's got to be removed. And then the developer has to deal with it. Either talk to Google and explain why it's violating and see if they have to adjust the rules, or fix the app so it doesn't violate. Like, the rules are the rules. Like, this is, we need that, because if you don't have that, you get malicious apps, especially with the wave of malicious apps we saw in Q4. Google's got to clamp down on this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Hey, and at least they're moving fast.
That's true. Yeah, they're not messing around. And I know that's not going to make some people happy, because people many power users want to have absolute control. And, you know, so they're, I saw some people like, well, I'm saving the APKs of the old versions so that they don't get taken from my phone.
That's fine. Like, but I'm on a thumb drive.
Go for it.
But I can understand why Google would want to clamp down on this. And I think overall it's probably for the best. And if it really is a use case that's above and beyond, it's like, oh, well, I hadn't really thought of that before, and they make that case, maybe they create an API that serves that in a responsible way. And that doesn't solve the problem right now, but hopefully that's what happens.
Hey, there's one thing we've learned, is that sticking with Android has been an absolute payoff all these years. It's that things, you know, it gets updates and it's being constantly iterated on. And I, as a user, I appreciate that, because I kind of toe the line of casual and enthusiast user. Right.
Right.
So I would like to be serviced in both realms, not just as an enthusiast, but also as a person who wants my life to be easier and not have my data leaked. Please. Yeah,
it's fair.
Please.
It's fair.
Please not that. All right, Ron, you got the last one.
All right, the one thing that the world needs is another cloud gaming service, but that's not going to stop Verizon. Verizon is testing a new cloud gaming service called, you know, wait for it, wait for this, the marketing and branding wizards that came up with this one, Verizon Gaming.
Whoa,
wow.
Huh?
What?
Oh, VZG.
Verizon Gaming? VZG, everybody. VZG. You can see that on a t-shirt. I'm going to get a tattoo of VZG because I'm a Verizon gamer. So they're testing this new cloud platform service on Android on the down low. So keep that in mind. It's currently running on the NVIDIA Shield, and it's soon to be on Android as well, Android 2. You can use a paired Xbox One controller if you want. And they've got 135 plus games currently shown in screenshots, including Red Dead Redemption 2, God of War, Battlefield 5, Destiny 2, and many other great games. Fortnite, everyone's favorite Fortnite. The current test is focused on performance, and later will be focused on securing top titles. And you got to wonder if this is going to be their big selling point for 5G. You know, high speed, low latency, good for, you know, big games like Red Dead Redemption. Would Verizon choose to zero rate this kind of data usage? And then it begs the question, would this fare better than Verizon's failed streaming video service, Go90?
Oh, remember Go90?
And I got to imagine, the bar is pretty low to do better than Go90, to be honest.
That's true. Yeah. Well, there's a lot to be gained from creating a streaming gaming service that actually works. Like, if 5G is the way to make this a mobile game streaming solution that works the way gamers would want, you know, that low latency, high speed, then maybe Verizon is ripe to create a winner here. But I mean, who knows? But it's being tested now, so I guess if you're on Verizon, it applies to you. And if you're not,
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I guess if you are, this goes back. This is the Amazon approach, right? If you are have a Verizon mobile phone, if you have Verizon Fios at home, and you're watching, you know, your cable TV through Verizon Fios, and you're into gaming, it would make sense to just use Verizon's gaming. Cool, I can totally use this. And it seems like if they're currently focusing on performance and then going towards top tier games, and they already have Red Dead Redemption and God of War and Fortnite, which are some of the best games already. Like, so maybe they're taking the right approach. I'm not a gamer, so I'm not looking for a cloud gaming service. It makes sense in terms of this makes more sense than Go90.
Yeah.
In terms of having their suite of options. Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Well, maybe I'll try it out as a Verizon user. Although I would just appreciate having the ability to make phone calls in my house.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if they install this app on your phone and all you can do is disable it, then what?
That's why I buy my phones unlocked. I don't buy them from Verizon. I don't want any of that stuff.
That's true. Good point.
Sorry, Big Red.
You're smart.
Not interested.
And now, boom, 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 boom,
yes.
Boom. It's time for the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Twit.to/AAApoll 402 is where you went to vote. And if you did, you did not see the results at the end of your voting because I did not switch that on, and I'm sorry. But, Victor, you have the link. Excellent. So,
We
have the results. This is the first App Arena of the year. And, Ron, you went with the retro pick, and your gamble paid off.
Yeah.
Lemmings.
I am shocked. Because I thought Mr. Success was going to be a success.
Oh, boy. Mr. Success was not a success at all. Lemmings wins with a lot of the vote. I guess it doesn't give us percentages on this. Around 40%. History here, second place. Chess.com, third place. Crossover for Chrome OS Beta, fourth place. And Mr. Success, not a success at all. It was like 12%.
So while we didn't, it's the first arena of the year, so we're back at scratch now.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to do the points. Actually, Victor, can I get the can you put the graph back up again? I'm sorry. I'm not going to do the points. We'll let Wade County do that next week. But currently, I am in first. The guests are in second. And Flo is in third. And Jason is in fourth. So that's your standings after 1 week.
When there's two guests on one episode,
it throws everything off.
Yeah, which definitely skewed. Bit. Yes,
we did figure that out. We did that. That was in all the various, different versions,
permutations.
And permutations. We did figure out what happens when there's two guests. But either way, the guests are in second place. So there you go.
Because
I won. Ha.
There you go. Ha ha. Whatever. All right. So you win.
I go last, right?
You go last. Yeah. Although I'm on an iPad, so I can't rearrange the order of these rows. So we're just going to have to leave them the way it is. I'll go first.
Just go with it.
This is a quick app, and I'm not sure. Well, let's just say I had to take a trip, and I had to go to the DMV last week.
Oh.
Isn't that fun? Isn't that so much fun sitting in the DMV waiting? Feeling like at any moment you could get sick. I always feel like when I go to the DMV, like, is everyone around me like sneezing? Because I feel like they're sneezing and like I'm going to walk out of there with a cold. Anyways, went to the DMV. I was there for about half an hour and they actually flashed this like ad for an app up. And I like the cause. So I'm showing that off today. It's actually an app made by GM and it's called Call Me Out. This is an app that is designed to help keep you from touching your phone while you're driving. It's very much one of those apps that's like a single kind of purpose. But I kind of like what they're doing here. So basically what you do is you use the app to record. You can either record yourself like I did down here.
Just put the phone down. Stop it. What are you doing?
I don't know if you can hear that. It's really quiet for whatever reason. But I recorded a bit of audio that's like, put the phone down. Stop. Don't do that. Put your phone down. And you could record a number of these with people that you know. So you get your friends, get your family, whoever, if you can talk a celebrity into recording one for you, sure, have at it. But you can stock it up in here and load a bunch of these voice recordings in. And so then when you're actually driving over 5 miles per hour, your Android phone will automatically detect that you are, and it will activate this app in the background. So if you then touch your phone, it's going to play this audio for you and tell you to put your phone down in one of the many voices that has been recorded. And then there's a social component too. I did not touch my phone, so I cannot show off the social component. See, I don't touch my phone when I'm driving anymore. But if I had, it would show me my stats compared to a bunch of other people, or I could actually create a group. So if I had like my friends and my family in on this also, and we've all recorded our audio bits for everyone else, then we can track each other's progress over time. And we can see that, dad, quit touching your phone. I know that you did it because the app showed that to me and I don't approve. So I don't know. I just thought it was kind of a neat way to kind of go about it. Right now, my rank is 11,936 out of 11,938. Don't ask me what that means. I haven't touched my phone, so I don't know if that's good or bad. But anyways, you would want to compare yourself against the people you know anyways. So it's called Call Me Out. It's a single-purpose app, and it's kind of goofy, but I like it. I think it's a kind of an interesting way to prevent you from touching your phone. It also has like a full-screen takeover if you actually end up interacting with your phone while you're driving. And there is a button that you can press if you really want to. If you happen to be a passenger, let's say, you can press that button and it won't count against your leaderboard. But Call Me Out, made by GM, and I think it's kind of neat. So check it out. All right.
The reviews on this are people complaining about, why do you need this app?
Well, it's true. Maybe you don't need this app.
I didn't mean to say that to skew for you. I'm sorry I brought it up. I just brought it up to say that sometimes the comments for the Google Play Store are not indicative of the app and what good it could possibly serve. That's what I wanted to say.
I understand what you mean. Some people will go on there and complain because, well, I don't touch my app. Why do I need this app? 1 star.
No.
Not everybody has your, follow through, I guess. Or I don't know. So anyways, Call Me Out. Check it out. All right. So Flo, you're up next and I have it installed.
Do you have anything purchased?
I don't have anything purchased. Actually, funny story. This, I had already set up an account on this a couple of years ago via Facebook, and I don't have my Facebook account anymore. So I couldn't log in with my account. But anyways, they have samples on here, so I can show this.
Perfect. So, my pick today, I'm not really interested in the Kindle ecosystem. I don't have books there. A lot of the books I have are through the Google Play bookstore. But I found that some of the books that I want to read are not always immediately available. And because I just don't want to deal with Amazon, I decided to let's go see what else I can find out there. And so I remembered that Kobo is, an ebook provider.
I'm shocked they're still around, to be honest.
Well, from what I understand, they're pretty big overseas because I see advertisements for Kobo like in front of, yes, there's still bookstores overseas.
They're based out of Canada. I remember that.
Yep. So the nice thing about Kobo is that I've been able to find titles that I haven't been able to find on Google Play. It also has audiobooks. So if you like to listen instead of perusing through text, you can do that. And the cool thing about Kobo books is that you actually rack up points. And so as you're like buying things, you're racking up points to help you like get free content. So you can get like credit towards, an ebook or whatever, and if you sign up for like a subscription through for the audiobooks or for the ebook, they give you discounts and things of the sort. I also like the fact that they offer a lot of different options for viewing. And of course, since it's all cloud-based, everything is synced in the sky for you. So you can pick up where you left off, no matter the device that you're on. It's just another alternative to using Amazon. it has a social component on it too. So if you are, you know, on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram and you're sharing books for whatever reason, you can do it from this app. You can read books in different languages. So you can read in English, French, Spanish, Italian, German, Dutch, Portuguese, Brazilian Portuguese, or Japanese. I found that reading books in other languages is what helps me learn them. So I like that I can do that through, I can read Spanish books to help me keep up on my Spanish through Kobo. And I just kind of wanted to bring it to the arena as another alternative to Kindle. So if you're looking for something besides the Kindle, besides the Google Play bookstore, and maybe there is a book out there, I found that if Google Play doesn't carry it and Amazon does, Kobo will usually carry it too. So if it's something that Amazon carries, you will likely find it on Kobo. And for that reason alone is why I decided to use this instead. So it's the Kobo app. It's an ebook
nice.
Provider.
Put on Curl.
Buy some
Ooh,
ebooks.
That's nice, Curl.
Yeah, it's, you know, they are constantly updating the app. In fact, the last time they updated it was January 11th. They update it with all the Android updates as well. They will fix issues. If you have, you know, anything to say about it, you can leave a review and they will help you out. And so it's just kind of, I just wanted to find something that was not Amazon.
Yeah, like it.
Yeah, not Amazon and not Google. So
awesome. So that is it Rakuten? Rakuten.
I think it's Rakuten. And also just worth Rakuten noting Kobo. That this brand, I haven't actually looked into it, so I'm purely speaking anecdotal here, but I've seen it pop up on like Korean drama apps, Japanese content apps. So I think they're an international company that I'm assuming is like buying up these things. And so they're like an international content company.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I feel like I've bought
Rakuten. Oh, yeah, they're Japanese electronic commerce and internet company based in Tokyo.
Yes.
So it's B2B. It's B2B to C e-commerce.
Yeah.
B2B so there you go.
So, that might explain why they have all the international stuff too, which I like.
Nice. So, yeah. Called Kobo Books.
They've bought a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they have 70 businesses, including online shopping, banking, credit card payments, media, travel, professional sports, video on demand, marketing and data analysis, e-reading, book distribution, fashion, and mobile messaging.
Wow.
Man.
Go Rakuten.
And they're part of Ebates, by the way, in case that means anything to anyone.
Yeah. Okay. They acquired Ebates in 2014. My mother uses Ebates. Ugh. They bought Viber. Viber Media.
Oh, okay.
Remember Viber?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. I didn't know they bought Kobo. There's no wonder that's... Yeah. All right. Cool. Good for them.
Kobo Books. All right, Ron. I got your app installed as well.
Yeah. So you might have heard earlier in the show, I was talking about how I'm on the OnePlus 6T, and it's a big phone. And big phones are cool because I can do a lot more stuff. And I love the big, I'm taking like 19:9 aspect ratio photos or whatever the crazy long photos are. Even, you know, I don't have Jason Howell hands, but I've got pretty big hands. But even my hands, if Victor, can you go back to me before you go back to Jason? For even me using the phone as I try to figure out the camera, it is hard to get my thumb all the way up to the top to swipe down the notification pane. And so when I saw this app, I was like, oh, hey, here's a good solution for those of us with big phones. It is called Bottom Quick Settings. And what it basically does is it gives you a little pane that you can swipe up from the bottom, much like an iOS phone, to access your notifications, to your same notification pane that you get from the top of the phone. So yeah, so when you swipe up, you got to, when you install the app, you got to do all the permissions and the overwriting and all that sort of stuff. But if you go, yeah, if you swipe up, you get the substitute. So you hit this dismiss to get rid of that, Jason, on the blue bar. There you go, a little message. There you go. So when you swipe up just gently, you get that, that little mini bar, and then you swipe up very longly or whatever the correct word there, you get the full access to it. And in addition to this, you can customize the icons. You can customize the layout of this. You can customize the sliders. So in addition to brightness, you can – if you go swipe up – there you go. Go swipe down. So you're on the app itself. So when you open up the app, there's a big button along the top that lets you turn the service on and off. So turning, sliding that little action button turns the service off. So it doesn't work if instead now it's working on. So if you hit the tiles button, you can specify what tiles will be available. You do have to pay for the app to unlock access to the tiles. But that way you can, you know, if you never use airplane mode, get rid of that. If you always, you know, want to use night mode, you can add that tile. All the different, you know, tons and tons of different tiles are available. So if you unlock the app, you can get that. And I believe it's not that much money. You should support your devs. It is $2.49 to unlock that. So, but if you go to and you do little donations there. But if you go to sliders, that is not unlocked or that is not locked. So you can add media volume, alarm volume, ringer volume, notification volume. Access to those things sometimes can be arcane on our phones these days. So it's nice to be able to access all of them or none of them or whichever ones you want. It's just totally customizable and lets you swipe up from the bottom. That's all it is. So bottom quick settings, free in the Google Play Store, $2.49 in-app purchase to unlock customizations like colors as well as tile organization, things like that. You can change the design of the handle, the little dot that shows that it's available. You can do that, or if you go back, you can change the theme of this to a light theme or a dark theme. Last week we talked about how popular dark themes were. If you hit the hamburger menu there, Jason, app theme under general, first one, you can change it to dark or black. None more black.
It's than the
same as dark. Yeah, there yep. it is. But yeah, so bottom quick settings. It's pretty neat, nifty little app for your big old phone with your small hands. Or big hands, or whatever you want to. If you can't bend your thumb all the way up, so there you go.
Nice,
awesome. Bottom quick settings, free in the Google Play Store.
Free and $2.49 to upgrade to the premium features: customized tiles, customized colors, remove the ads, and a music notification panel. Yeah. Very nice. Bottom quick settings. All right. Time for you to place your vote. Is it is your favorite app Call Me Out? Is it bottom quick settings or Kobo Books? twit.to/AAApoll403 is where you want to go. Tap there, and you will go directly to the poll. I think I set it up appropriately to where you'll see the results as they are done. Victor is swinging around with the... All right, he needs selected bottom.
Victor wants utilitarian settings. Help.
Going with the winner.
Don't we all? it appears that... It's hard to see because the logo is blocking it. There we go. Call Me Out with one vote. Bottom quick settings with two votes. Kobo Books has yet to get a vote, but it will. Don't worry. It will. And we will check in on that next week and see who is the winner and then add that to this week's total. And, I mean, we're off to the races. This year's arena is in full swing at this point.
I'm trying to not phone it in this year.
Well, Kobo Books is a great way to start, Flo. I was just gonna say, I'm nervous as winning the first arena of the year because it's a very long year. Yes. And just because you win early on doesn't mean you're gonna win at the end. So yeah,
it's true. Yeah. You never know what's gonna happen. A lot of fun, you guys. We've got some good title suggestions. We had some laughs. We shared some tears. We bared our souls to you. And you know so much more about us at the end of this episode. Yes, it's been one of those episodes, and we thank you for joining us. I don't know what that was all about. Flo, what's up? What's new in your world?
Right now, I'm just kind of coming up with a bunch of ideas in this post-CES world, right? It's been kind of quiet on the internet this week.
Yeah.
So until people get back to their desks... Just visit me at FlorenceIon.com.
Visit for the flow feed.
Mm-hmm. Visit the flow feed. I think I'm going to update this week with some random musings. And look, I came up with my own CES banner, even though I didn't go.
Nice.
See you. CES 2019, but from home.
But from home.
that's the better way to do it, I think. good stuff. Thank you, Flo. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Ron, what about you?
Well, we didn't run long, so I'm not going to mind because I've got a lot of things to talk about in this little promo section. So first off,
First off, go to finalepodcast.com. That's my other podcast. We've moved to a bi-weekly schedule because 2019 is going to be fun and challenging. And so we want to make sure we're still going to be doing episodes, me and Carrie, but every 2 weeks. And today we released episode 16, The Sopranos, one of the greatest finales of all time. So yeah, you want to listen to that. But I'm super – finale is great, so go subscribe to that. Thank you, everybody. But I'm super excited because last year I hinted and I talked about I was working on a project and I mentioned it a couple of times. Well, last Friday – we actually unveiled the project to the world. It was kind of a pre-launch, but I would more than anything want to share with the audience here about a new project I'm working on. It's something called Scorbit. And you can go to scorbit.io. And those of you who follow me know that I love playing pinball. And if you follow me on Instagram, you see pictures of pinball machines and things like that. Well, for the past couple of years, me and some friends from the Bay Area have been working on this project. And it's basically it's a device that goes inside pinball machines and connects them to the internet. And in doing that, we can do cool things like you can upload your scores to an app, and we have an API where we'll be able to do visualizations, and people who own pinball machines can remotely manage the machines and things like that. So it's a lot of fun. Like I said, I've been working on it, I think, since 2015.
Yeah,
I've
been working on this for a while. Yeah.
So we designed some custom hardware, running it's a neat little box that fits inside the pinball machine, and it's got Wi-Fi and connectors and all these amazing ports and everything like that. Actually, Victor, if you go back to the website and click on our first public update, there's a picture of the board. The device itself is called the Scorbitron. There it is. If you scroll down, there's a little photo of that's a little close up of the board that we designed and are working on manufacturing now. So I've got a hardware startup, everyone.
Dude, that is amazing, and I am so proud of you, Ron.
Me too.
Because this has been a long game for you, right? Like the last three years, you've been working on this. You had the idea. I remember very early on when you were telling me about it, and I was like, wow, like, and even at that point, I was like, wow, Ron's smart. Like, how do you come up with this and then make it happen? And you've made it happen. That is amazing.
Well, I mean, I appreciate the compliment. I can't take all the credit. I have two amazing co-founders, Brian O'Neill, who is works at Slack, used to work at Eventbrite, worked at Dig. That's where I met him. And he's actually a top 100 pinball player. So he's an amazing player. And Jay Adelson, who is the former CEO of Dig. Back in the day, if you remember Jay, back in the day, the one of the co-founders of Revision 3 and all that stuff. So the three of us have been working on this, and I dreamt up the idea initially because I just wanted a way to keep track of my scores on pinball machines. And both Jay and Brian came in and added the magic, and we've been collaborating on this, and we've got a bunch of developers from around the world working on it, and we've got some amazing hardware folks that have been working with us on it. It's been very educational. It's crazy because you're trying to get technology that was created in the 70s, 80s, and 90s to work today. And so, you know, like, so what's super exciting is that, like, a pinball machine, like, we all know that we grew up with, like, the animation and the screen and everything. That was the first thing we got working, but we also got what's called solid state machines, which are the machines from the 70s, which are literally just solid state electronics. We're able to convert that, the score data, into data that we can then suck up and load up to our API and actually keep track of those scores. And if you know anything about electronics, that's not easy.
No way, dude.
So it's been a trip.
And
so.
just out of total curiosity, even though this has nothing to do with Android, but still, I'm so proud of you. That is awesome. On those old machines, like, do you have to explicitly test, like, you probably have to seek out all of these pinball machines in order to test and make sure how each unique machine works with this. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, to a certain degree, like phones and like most hardware, even dating back to the 70s, pinball machines are all running off of a operating system. So what happens is a lot of pinball machines have a ROM chip in them, and pinball machines that were created, you know, from 1978 to 1980 have this version of the ROM chip, and from 81 to 83 has this version of the ROM chip all the way up. And then when you get to the more, you know, to the electronics, to what we call DMD, the digital digital machine display or whatever the DMD stands for, the animation ones, those are running, you know, like real CPU processors that we can tap into and work with and all that sort of stuff. So it's still computing. It's still the same kind of technology, but it's written completely from scratch, not in any program, you know, programming language that we know or anything like that. You know, I can't divulge how we're doing what we're doing because we actually filed for a patent, which is pretty cool. So currently right now it's patent pending, which is kind of awesome. The patent it's been about a year and a half of that process. And the patent seems to be going well. But yeah, it's crazy. And we are, so the announcement was just that we exist. We were co-sponsor of a tournament in Southern California last weekend, where we had 8 prototypes working and the tournament sending scores to the scorekeeping software as well as also to the live stream on Twitch. So people could see like what the scores of the players were in real time. So that was really cool. And so we kind of announced that we existed. And if you go to scorebit.io, you can read the whole email where we announce it. And in there, there's a link to sign up for our beta program. And our beta program is where we're figuring out, okay, who's going to get these, the first wave of our devices. And we've got to do a lot of field testing, but we're also developing, you know, player apps. So the idea is that I'm a pinball player and I can go to an arcade and I can log into that machine and save my score and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I'm very passionate about shipping on both platforms at the same time. and if anything, we're looking more into like progressive web apps and things like that versus actually, you know, native apps and having all those fun conversations. So, yeah, so it's been cool. And I creative directed the logo, which I'm very proud of.
I love the logo. Yeah, it's great. I love the name too. Scorebit is a great name. I'm so stoked for you, man. That is amazing.
It's pretty cool. We're excited. I'm excited. So it's a fun thing. Finally paid off. Good way to start off the new year. Needless to say, I picked the worst time to launch a startup.
Sometimes that's just how it goes.
You got this, Ron.
I've been saying it a lot. How do you make God laugh? Make a plan. So there it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. So I know it's not Android related, but it is tech related and, you know, and it is technology and it will reach Android at some point. So stay tuned. So follow along.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm so happy. Thank you, Ron. That's amazing. Congratulations. I'm just at jasonhowell.net.
Oh,
that's all I got.
In the time that we've done this podcast, you put out like what, 3 albums?
Yeah, exactly.
It's okay.
How many successful Kickstarters have you done? Come on, man.
I don't even know. I don't even know. No, I do too. But that's it for this this episode. Hey, if you are not following us, and by us, I mean the entire network on Twitter or Instagram, you can do a search for Twit. We are all over. And, you know, a lot of the shows that we do, some behind the scenes stuff, you can find all that stuff on those feeds. So check for that. As for this show, we are done and out of here, I think on time, which is never happens.
Early.
Voicemails can be left at 347-SHOW-AAA. Send us emails at AAA@twit.tv. You can find this show on Twitter at Android Show. You can find all of the apps that we've ever reviewed in the arena at our arena apps list, twit.to/Android apps. And we thank the folks who keep that updated. Really appreciate your hard work. Show notes and past episodes can be found at twit.tv/AAA. Go there. You'll find everything you need to know as far as all of our episodes, subscribing to the podcast in audio and video form, an embedded player, details, show notes, everything's there. All the links to the apps from each episode. Yeah, we jam it full of information for you to encourage you to check it out. And finally, you can catch us live on the stream every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. That's it for this week. We'll see y'all next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.